Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and the big questions this week. Will anybody believe Hulk Hogan isn't racist? Were WWE creative happy hearing about the Performance Center stalker, knowing their fans also throw shit at the wall? And does Seth Rollins get nervous when his girlfriend asks him to go for a shower?
I'm Carl Jones. Last week, G. John Chase inferred that I had something in common with Greg the Hammer Valentine. He's right. Neither of us look good in jumpsuits. Both of us have faces that only a mother could love, and much like Greg the Hammer Valentine in the ring, when it comes to me in the bedroom, I don't get warmed up till the 15-minute mark.
I'm G. John Chase, and I gotta be honest with you, I think Hulk Hogan's pretty unlucky. He needs the limelight to be taken off of him. Maybe another Hall of Famer could help him out. Could be put in prison for murder. Oh, nah, just don't listen to me. I don't know what I'm talking about. Hogan isn't that lucky.
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and obviously the luckiest man in wrestling is CM Punk, because he's never met me.
This is the panel for the 53rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about the luckiest and unluckiest wrestlers in history next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 53rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Kieran O'Rourke.
Evening all.
Carl Jones.
Hola.
And G. John Chase.
Booty!
And we are back this week to talk about the luckiest and unluckiest wrestlers in history. Return to our kind of feedback-heavy format after a couple of weeks away. So we're looking forward to this one. It's going to be a lot of fun. Quick programmer note, though, before we get into today's show. Next week, we are returning to SCG Court. We are indeed. If you haven't heard one of our trial shows before, you can go back and listen to them in the archives at squaredcirclegazette.com. We previously had Eric Bischoff, Paul Heyman, Kevin Nash, and Triple H on trial. Next week, we're going for the big fish as Hulk Hogan is going on trial on the charge of committing irreparable damage to the wrestling business. So, of course, we want your feedback on that one too, so get your comments on that in to scgradio@hotmail.com. We'll guarantee to use it as a witness statement on next week's show. But, of course, we've also got feedback for this show. So many different candidates on the luckiest and unluckiest wrestlers in history. Definitely better to be lucky than good in the wrestling business, or many walks of life. So we're going to get to those who were and were not lucky over the course of their careers. We're going to start with Mr. Scorpio from F4W, who says Kevin Nash must be up there for luckiest. Right time at the right place in 94 with Hogan buggering off again, the failed Luger push and business slumping, leading to Vince scrambling for someone big to be his next top guy. Then after he tanked his champion 95, he got a sweet deal to go to WCW and straight to the main event picture there and run roughshod over the place, both in and out of the ring, for the next 4 years and rake in the cash. Then he still gets runs later on in WWE and TNA, jammy bastard. Yeah, baby, from Wrestling Forum says Kevin Nash was pretty lucky to get handed the title so quick in his run in the WWF. Even though his run was basically a disaster, it put him on the map and gave him bargaining power to make a ton of money and become a big star. Not saying the guy isn't talented because he had plenty of upside, but if you look at his beginnings, I think he was pretty lucky. And Heyman from TPWW says, luckiest is Kevin Nash. Make friends with the right people and throwing up a few cool hand signs equals millions of dollars. Go figure.
Don't forget the hair flip.
To tie it all back together, of course, we did have Kevin Nash on our, one of our previous trials, and he was not guilty. Not guilty.
Bullshit.
He's just a charming guy. See, is that luck, or is that part of his talent? His talent, his skill set is obviously his size, his hair.
And
his,
bullshit.
And his charming bullshit, so I'm not sure if that's
a chancer, as you called him.
It's a chancer. I'm not sure if that's luck or just innate skills.
Certainly right place, right time in the sense of Sean finding him. I mean, the fact that he was Vinny Vegas previously, and you know, a couple of years later, he's the guy.
Yeah, certainly. Though, I always think, although it was said in sort of a very comedic way there from Kieran, I think there is a point out in the sense of Nash had a skill set. It sure as shit wasn't in the ring, but he had this skill set and this ability to play the game. So it depends how you want to interpret the in terms of the word luck, I suppose. Was he lucky to get that at that initial foot in the door? Absolutely, but let's not pretend he didn't help manipulate the situation to its maximum potential.
But there's a lot of people throughout wrestling history who have been in the right place at the right time, which I think the writer mentioned there. The thing that deems someone being lucky when being in the right place at the right time is when they have no discernible talent, and yet they still get pushed, which is why Kevin Nash is such a great example, because you know there was a lot of people around in that company that probably could have done a similar job, and they were in the right place at the right time. But they didn't get into the position because they didn't have a horseshoe up their ass like Kevin Nash did. Maybe Shawn Michaels put it there, I don't know. But it's just, Kevin Nash is one of these people who always seems that he's always riding his luck for as long as possible, whether it's from still finding work in TNA and whatever, getting into the freaking Hall of Fame. It's just like,
it's like snowballing good luck with Nash, isn't it? Like, he was does nothing, gets right place, right time to get the diesel push, bombs. He's pretty he's terrible in the ring, but he gets the rep because he's in the right company at the right time. So he snowballs onto the WCW thing.
Contract coming in terms of look, contract coming up at the perfect time to make that deal with WCW after the Monday Night War had already kicked off. There's just so many with Nash. I think that he's one of the more. That's why I put him first, because to me, he's one of the best candidates in this entire thing.
I'm sure Big K would say, you make your own luck.
Well, that's what. To an extent you do, but obviously there's certain things which he had no influence over whatsoever that certainly ended up benefiting him by default, such as Trips marrying Stephanie. I'm fairly certain Kevin Nash had no involvement in those two getting together, and yet it's funny how that just happens to work out nicely for him decade later.
Actually, of all the Kevin Nash stories or moments in his career, was the contract. WWF started kind of playing games where they were saying they were going to bring Diesel and Razor Ramon back. And so WCW, without even asking Nash or Hall whether they were actually back in negotiations with WWF, just basically offered them bigger and better contracts. And just Nash just kind of went like, all right then, even though they said they never asked me if we were leaving. And yet he gets more money for doing absolutely nothing. And that's... lucky.
Yeah, the thing is, there's a thing, it's like, is it pure? It's clearly luck, get me wrong.
Absolutely luck.
But at the same time, it's just he's in the right spot for the incompetence of every level.
I was going to say, there's something to be said for the incompetence of other people, such as allowing Hall and Nash to be there on just sort of glorified deal sheets, not locked down contracts at the time.
That's what luck is. It's being in the right place at the right time, but with no. But you're there not because of skill.
Well, that's it. So I guess so. To define Nash's luck, it is absolutely right place, right time, right place for the WF push, right place for the WCW mega money. But and let's not forget, he wasn't the only one to get fucking shitload of money thrown at him.
No,
and the guy
Stevie Ray and Scott Norton and all these guys.
One difference there, where a lot of other wrestlers did get a shitload of money, and he wasn't the only one. One difference is, and I'm surprised the emailers didn't mention it here. He's the guy who got to break the streak.
Oh, talk Goldberg.
Talk about just landing on your feet in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's so many. Again, the phrase that we used, I think, to kick off the trial was moonwalk his way through life. And that's pretty much what Kevin Nash has done ever since he stepped foot into the wrestling business.
It's an impressive feat considering he's got two bum knees.
It is indeed. Moving on to one here that is a little bit higher in the skill pecking order. Pseudonymically from F4W says, Daniel Bryan has had so many lucky breaks and coincidences that led him to the very top. You can only get so far being one of the greatest in a company that doesn't want you on top. RZombie88 from F4W says, Daniel Bryan is the best wrestler for years and doesn't get signed. Get signed. WWE does everything they can to undermine him and make a joke out of him, and he somehow gets past it and his injuries start catching up. Harmonic Generator from the UK fan forum say, Daniel Bryan's been pretty lucky and unlucky in the last couple of years. He main events SummerSlam and wins the title only to have it taken off him immediately, put into a months long angle of him getting screwed repeatedly, and is then bumped back down the card. He recovers from that, manages to get into the main event of WrestleMania and wins the title only to have it taken off him when he gets injured. He recovers after months of recuperation, gets a featured match and IC title win at the following WrestleMania only to have that taken off him too when he gets injured again. And Steve Bochenek echoes this one as far as unluckiest, saying the injuries have come at the exact wrong time for him. He finally climbs the mountain to earn the world championship, has to relinquish it, fights to return and gets the IC belt, and again has to give it up.
Yeah, it's I think Daniel Bryan is definitely unlucky more so than lucky, because I mean it's just the only kind of real moment you can really think of where he did have a bit of luck was obviously with WrestleMania 30, due to obviously the program that was originally planned for, like, you know, like Triple H and CM Punk and so on and so forth. So, you know, he was in, again, the right place at the right time, but unlike Nash, he's actually got skills. But that's the only real time where I thought, like, in his career he was lucky, because he had to really, like, scratch and claw. You know, he never had it easy. I mean, if you think about, like, when he came into, like, NXT and how they kind of treated him, how, like, Michael Cole would just, like, bury him, like, every week, just saying he doesn't have it and so on and so forth. He really had to fight through a lot, every little bit of it. And it was only just, like, his little connection with the audience, where the audience liked the fact he was an underdog, was what got him there in the end. So it's like, the luck side of things is very small. It's that thing of what's the key to success. It's a lot of skill and just a little bit of luck with him. Everything from the moment he won the title has been unlucky for him. The injury, death in the family as well. It just kind of snowballed for him. And it's just been, it's basically just been bad ever since, really. He hasn't really got a chance. I mean, yeah, he won the Intercontinental title this year, but again, he's out injured. They don't know whether he's coming back. He's claiming that WWE might never clear him. The guy barely had any luck to begin with, but now he seems to develop bad luck.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how much of a correlation I see between the Punk quitting and Brian benefiting from that, in truth, because even with Punk leaving, the plan still wasn't to work Brian into the main event at WrestleMania at that stage. The way Brian got there was more the visceral reaction against Batista and Orton as a program.
But that's looking in its own right.
It is, but in comparison to say Nash as an example, the visceral reaction against the Orton and Batista program was because the fans wanted Brian there because of his talent, not because of any, you know, it was sort of lucky to be there. Because that was never the plan. He had to fight for that. So I don't really consider it luck myself. But in terms of unluckiness, let's not overlook the fact that, you know, in terms of a slice of unluckiness, he wins the belt to be given the Kane feud.
That didn't take long. Theo Diaz from TPWW, I apologise. We couldn't stop old man Jones from his Kane hatred.
It was 13 minutes, people. Come on.
I seriously thought the way you were saying that then, I thought you were going to say, like, he was also unlucky because he married Brie Bella as well.
Give me some of that bad luck.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't say he was lucky at all. I think he's overcome all the stigmas because his ability and ability to get over. When they turned on the Orton Batista program, he was lucky that he was over in the position, but they also turned on him because he was so over himself. So six one half dozen the other, and then just, you know, when he's finally, after everything they've thrown in front of him, wanting to Rey Mysterio him, basically,
yeah.
They kind of almost accept him begrudgingly as a main eventer with his own little niche, and the injuries strike. So I just unlucky for me. Yeah.
Could there be two more polarizing people to start with? If there was ever a good example of a Mike Adam Lee's favorite line, if you're a big guy, you have to prove you can't play, and if you're a little guy, you have to prove you can. It's just that just sums it up there. Like, all the chances and opportunities Nash stumbled his way into, and Daniel Bryan gets this breadcrumb after years and years, and then bad luck strikes. Ash C from the UK Fan Forum says, this could apply to a number of guys, but the one that comes to mind is Easy Money, of all people, who started to take off in ECW, but then ECW was on its way down the plug hole, so he pops over to WCW, receives a couple of well-received wins on TV and pay-per-view, and then there kaput within a fortnight. Bit of an ironic name in hindsight. I don't know much about the rest of his career, but it seems very unlikely for not one but two big breaks to fall apart so quickly. Although Easy Money, I think that you could probably kind of lump this in with a lot of the guys from like 2000 WCW who just about got started and then it all fell to shit for them.
Yeah, it's unfortunate timing for them, though. I'm not sure how unlucky it is to lose your run as a tag team partner with them. Julio De Niro, and to have Confederate Chris Hamrick in your corner.
Accompanied by Elektra, don't forget her.
I'm not sure how soul destroying that must have been for him, in truth, but it'd be hard to single him out, I think, considering the glut of people that happened to in that time period.
Yeah, Roller Macker from TPWW, actually, just to add to this point, says, would unlucky guys be the ones who are finally breaking out in 2001 right before WCW folded, like a Shane Helms, Elix, yeah. Skipper, yeah. O'Hare, Palumbo, Stasiak, Jindrak, Chronic, he's listed in there. They're all hitting their strides and putting on great matches in those final months, and they never really found that place after.
I would argue with several of those names, they were probably only on TV because of the dire straits of WCW at the time, and probably shouldn't have been on TV in the first place.
Yeah, that was my...
Chronic.
Chronic definitely on there. Yeah, I just remember kind of feeling bad for the Cruiserweights in particular, and Shane Helms... being the main one, because I quite like Shane Helms, and because it was just that thing of, like, as soon as they were gone, you just knew, like, okay, the landscape's changed now, there's only going to be WWF, and they haven't exactly been the best at promoting cruiserweight wrestling, and so I just kind of felt like those guys, a lot of them would just be kind of like washed away. They either wouldn't be hired or be jobbed out, basically, because Vince won't see anything in them, or turned into superheroes.
Well, he was the lucky one. I mean, like, we were talking about the guys we did our show talking about the invasion, you know, about a year ago at this time, I think. The 24 guys they brought in, so many of them we never even saw on TV. So, hey, at least Helms got that far. Asif from the UK fan forum says, Dr. Death Steve Williams has to be up there for unluckiest, in that they brought him in ostensibly to be this big hard man opponent for the mega drawing babyface champion of the biggest company ever's hottest era, only to opt to build him up with a legitimate fighting tournament involving a particularly handy member of the Smoking Guns, a decision no booker has made before or since, for obvious reasons. That knockout punch stapled countless Dr. Death figures to the Toys R Us shelves and killed his main event hopes off dead. I would have been up for a battle of the Steveses.
That's an absolutely fair point. I would also state that I'd consider Bart Gunn to be incredibly unlucky as well, because he had to go on to face Butterbean. So
was there anybody involved in that entire tournament who had any luck at all?
As much as we critique bad booking and other people do the same, the Brawl for All, I feel, is one that seems to have got a pass over the years. Unfairly so.
I don't know why.
It's such a terrible concept. I think
it took up so much TV time in 98. It was unbelievable.
It did, you know, and whilst they're very much still in the midst of the war, nothing settled by 98. So it seems inconceivable looking back. But the Brawl for All, I think, is one where you can take several names and reference their unluckiness. I think it's more just a case of Dr. Death being highlighted because of what the potential program was with Austin.
Although I will say, I think this might be kind of luck balancing itself out in a way, because I don't think that if it wasn't for the luck of Jim Ross being in the position to hire Dr. Death for a top heel spot against Steve Austin, that Dr. Death would have ever been considered as a top line opponent for Stone Cold in 98.
Yeah, and I was thinking myself, I mean, how would it have, if he wasn't in the Brawl for All, or the Brawl for All didn't happen, how would that program gone down? How long would it have lasted? Because I don't really see it clicking myself.
Tommy from the UK fan forum with one that had to be mentioned here, Ahmed Johnson. WWF were keen on the Big Johnson in a time when they were in flux, but the dope kept getting injured. They kept giving him a push, kept trying to do something, but he just kept pulling or tearing something until he'd missed the boat and wound up in WCW in a dire feud with Booker as a fat big T over the rights to the letter T. Chasing Amy Matt from WrestlingForum.com agrees, unluckiest Ahmed. Sloppy, dangerous on occasion, and couldn't talk, but at least two times from what I can think of, he was due to main event and get a big push, and an injury took it away. What a different world it would be if he had main evented against Undertaker and Rock had never joined the Nation. that doesn't bear thinking about at all. Paul Siebert from F4W echoes this one, says, Tony Norris, aka Ahmed Johnson, is a solid candidate for worst luck ever. Yes, he was clumsy and reckless in the ring, but I can't help but feel bad for the dude. He may not have been a good worker, but he had a great look, a weird charisma, and some nifty-looking power moves. The man clearly had intentions to push this big jacked-up dude to the moon. He wins the Intercontinental title and gets injured. They create the Nation of Domination to be a rogues gallery for him to fight, and he gets injured for 4 months. He turns heel, joins the Nation, and is about to be placed in a main event feud with The Undertaker, and then gets injured again. After he's gone from the company, another guy who happened to be named Tony Norris gets arrested for drugs and pimping young girls, and many wrestling news sites falsely reported that it was him. To this day, there are fans that still believe the dude was a pimp. Flash forward a couple of years and he gets the call from WCW, but he's gained a lot of weight and probably shouldn't be put on television without giving him time to train. They decide to repackage him as Big T and put him in a feud with Booker T over who had the legal right to use the letter T. Sadly, it didn't lead to a ladder match where they both fought over a giant Sesame Street style T. Remarkably, this didn't get over and he was soon dropped from television. So Ahmed is a candidate here for worst luck because...
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about his dying sides a lot, and the contributors there have too. But back in the day, I was an Ahmed fan.
I thought for sure he was can't miss for me at the time when I was a youngster.
Yeah, so yeah, and absolutely the as an Ahmed fan, the injuries were quite the blow for me too. So yeah, I'm on board with this one.
He probably did a lot of blow as well, actually, to help with those injuries. But much like yourselves, there are obvious downsides, which we've talked about to the point of ad nauseum before. But I think, you know, that there were upsides. He did have an impressive physique, a decent look. And I think he did have a sort of, as I think the emailer said, despite the fact that he couldn't string coherent sentences together, a bit like myself,
though.
he did have a unique charisma about him, I think. And he certainly... You know, we don't know if it would have moved business metrics too much, but you sort of think, yeah, the company clearly saw something in him. It may have gone somewhere in the short term at least, but yeah, the first one was the kidney injury, is that right?
Kidney injury, lacerated kidney.
Gee, ew. Yeah, so in the space of sort of, you know, what, 12 to 18 months, he has a lacerated kidney, ruptures tendons in his leg and his ankle.
Blows his knee.
It's just,
fucks up his hand.
His body's a complete wreck. It's no wonder that by the time he's rocked up in WCW that he's probably pulled this weight on, because his body's probably hanging together in truth. He probably can't train like he used to, so I suppose it's no great surprise there. But that's an incredibly unfortunate timing on his part, just almost instantly after he gets the IC belt.
I think as well, his downside is kind of irrelevant for this conversation. They were going to push him.
Yeah.
And we talk about the Nash thing. If he got the push in WWF at the time and he hadn't got injured, maybe his contract expires in 2 years, whatever, and then he's going to get a massive payday to go to WCW if he wants to. So that's a lot of money, he misses out on. So it's like the flip reverse of the Nash situation to a degree. Imagine if Nash got those injuries and never got the push when he was going for the title. He was about to beat Backlund, he gets injured. Never ends up getting a main event push.
What could have been?
Whilst it may not be any great loss to the wrestling business as a whole, from a personal standpoint, it's obviously an incredible loss of potential money.
I didn't know anything that was happening in wrestling between 93 and 99, so I didn't know what the history was. I didn't know if he went or whatever. I was just seeing this guy, 96 tapes and so on that I was buying, just looked at the guy and just thought, like, I see absolutely nothing in him at all. So I consider myself to be the lucky one that I didn't have to see any fucking Armour Johnson push.
Moving on here, Gorgeous Dale Newstead from TPWW says, I'm going to say Arn Anderson is one of the more unlucky guys in wrestling as far as his career goes. His career-ending injury and surgery came at a time where he could have played a fairly pivotal role in the NWO angle. I mean, he probably would have been buried, but he was also so goddamn good as a worker that one must believe at some point he could have picked up quite a few more main event paydays. He also seemed to be destined to be stuck in the role of always the bridesmaid. Maybe I'm the unlucky one with Arn's injury, as are many Canadian wrestling fans who never got to see much WCW, because as a lifelong WWF fan, I never got to see enough of Arn, and when I finally got a chance to see Nitro on a regular basis, he was retired. Also, tell Carl he's my inspiration, not really sure why, he just is.
You like me. You really, really like me.
Like someone wants a sugar daddy.
Maybe the wrestling prophet can hook me up with one. I think the problem I have with that suggestion is what the emailer touched on there. Personally, unlucky for Arn in terms of, whilst his career peak was probably gone by at this point, he was still an excellent talker, a really, really brilliant worker up to that point. So he could have quite easily had another 2 or 3 years as an active member of the roster, collecting paydays and potentially some big ones given the state of the WCW's business at the time. But I'm hard pressed to go too far on the bad luck, because I think, as the emailer touched upon there, he probably would have been buried. just to say that he would have been around a bit longer doesn't necessarily mean he would have been used properly.
Carl's absolutely right. I don't. You would have got buried with an hour. Everybody that wasn't in the NWO was going to get buried, and so he was better. He was safer off out of it. I mean, you just got to look at what happened to Ric Flair during that time, and that was Ric Flair in that company.
The bride,
the bride exactly. Before. So Arn would have got utter fucked, completely fucked. Yeah, Arn's one of those ones. It's like similar to when we've talked about who deserved pushes, who could have been a big star, and we mentioned like Brian Pillman and stuff. Arn's like one of those other ones where we all wish he could have been, because we all realise that he's one of the greatest men that ever lived, but we all know the reasons why he wasn't,
exactly.
It's because he didn't have the look. That's what it was, and I would say that was all it was. If you were to grade him in any other way possible, whether it's through promo skills, wrestling ability, whatever, this guy was A grade all the way through, and a lot better than certain talents from that same period. Fortunately, to pick someone very similar today, I think that's probably going to be along the same lines as someone like Kevin Owens. He's just got a very average look to him, and so unfortunately, whilst I'm a big fan of Kevin Owens, I'll see him being like another Arn Anderson-esque type. But yeah, what a great man.
And I admire your fandom of him there, G, and I agree. I agree with much of what you say up to a point. The point being that as much as I love Arn as well, and I think no one around this table has got much of a bad word to say about AA. When you look at it in that time frame, if you're with Jim Crockett or WCW, you've got Flair and you've got Anderson. You're going to go with Flair. I'm sorry, you just are. You go up north, even if he's got a bit of a better physique, more sort of the prototype physique, let's say, that Vince likes, you've got Arn or you've got Hogan, and you're going to go with Hogan. And particularly when it's a case of the babyface promotion with the babyface champion, you know. I love Arn, but he's no real true babyface, is he, in the context of that, in those times in the 80s. So, yeah, a bit of unluckiness towards the end of his career. I can't really critique too much the fact that he never got the big strap, though, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I kind of echo that. For me, he had a really good career.
Yeah, he had a damn good run.
Yeah,
you know?
And in a position that was probably perfect for him, in a company that was perfect for him. So, the injury, obviously, any injury you're going to say is unlucky, but for me, he had a good run to be proud of. Nothing, yeah, you say he could have got a bit of more of a push, but what, it would have been a failed push or a short-term push. I think, good career. Be happy, Arn.
Batcode 10 from Wrestling Forum says, as unlikely as it may sound to most, Bruno Sammartino's career blossomed because of good luck more than anything else. Sammartino's debut was in the late 1950s. He was basically a strong man with mediocre wrestling skills. Toots Mond even tried to give him a push by pairing him with the great Antonino Rocca. This move was only moderately successful and Sammartino remained an upper mid-carder. He had mostly ethnic appeal to the large Italian communities of some of the big cities in the Capital Wrestling Northeast Territory of the NWA, and it is very unlikely that Bruno would have remained an upper mid-carder if not for the untimely illness of Nature Boy Buddy Rogers. McMahon Sr. and Tootsman tried to cover up Rogers' cardiac diagnosis, but were painfully aware that the news was going to break out sooner or later. They made a decision to make an emergency handoff of the WWWF title at the next MSG show. Rogers and Sammartino were the rather than a 2 out of 3 4 match, but they had to settle for a 1-4 match that lasted 48 seconds so as not to risk Rogers getting a heart attack in the ring. The aging Rocker was passed over for Sammartino, who was put over by Rogers on that fateful night in MSG. Buddy Rogers' bad luck with his health turned out to be the luckiest break in the career of Bruno Sammartino.
And boy, are a load of members of the IWC currently pissed off.
What, just those comments alone?
Yeah.
But Sammartino had actually had, he came back from a lot even prior to that, because he'd been blackballed by the WWF. The deal was, I guess, he wanted to go to San Francisco, and McMahon Sr. double booked him on shows so that he had to no show one. So the Athletic Commission suspended him, which meant that all the other states in the country suspended him as well. At least that's Sammartino's version of the story. So he goes to Toronto to work for Frank Tunney in 62, gets so popular that by May 63, he's back in the WWF in New York, world champion beating Buddy Rogers. In terms of like bad luck, good luck balancing itself out, I think this is kind of one in his favour here, and of course the next 8 years of drawing consistently fantastically speaks for itself. But the point there, I guess, is it took that one good look of, we have to get it off Buddy Rogers, he'd been the biggest draw of the 50s, in such quick fashion to make a guy.
But was there a certain inevitability to that happening at some point anyway?
I think so.
Over the next 8 years?
Yeah, it was. Maybe it would have. Although it's interesting because I know that Buddy Rogers has said, I think if I remember reading correctly, he said to somebody that there was original plan to do a rematch in October where he was going to get the belt back from Bruno. But there was a bust-up and more heart problems. So.
Yeah, I suppose the argument would be if Rogers doesn't have the health issues, whilst obviously at some point you've got to... You've got to be looking to transition that belt off him sooner rather than later, probably. I suppose the argument could be made, if it's not such a rush job, someone else comes along in that time period, or they earmark someone other than Sammartino. So I suppose that's where you'd use that luck argument.
But I could say there's a certain, again, echoes of the Bryan thing. How over was Bruno when he got the title?
Well, he was very popular. I mean, he was over huge in Canada, so...
Yeah, so it's, there's momentum there, there's kind of, you know, there's something behind him there, so it's not a complete fluke. You could foresee it happening at another point later down the line if it wasn't at that point. So, you know, maybe it's just, yeah, obviously the timing, but I think, who's to say?
We weren't there, yeah. So we are playing hindsight guy a little bit here, but...
Unlike Nash, where it's just like... Because we keep using him as the punchback.
We've got the benchmark.
Yeah, we put him there for a reason.
We got the beaten stick here, but it's just Bruno Sammartino has one of the longest runs as champion ever. That isn't luck. When you go for that long, that isn't luck. That's just general.
And then got it again afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. That's skill. That's popularity.
Talking about long title reigns, Tim Maher sent me a message at Wrestling Profit. That's on Twitter, folks, at Wrestling Profit, saying, also luckiest Bob Backlund. I guess you had to be there, although those who were seem equally confused.
That's awesome. I could see lucky in the sense that they had a blueprint they wanted. To me, the luckiest point with Backlund is the fact that they decided that the Billy Graham experiment, they were going to, regardless of how well that went, they were going to Backlund no matter what. to me, that's the luckiest break of all, because so many promoters would have just said, you know what, this is going well with Billy Graham, let's just turn him babyface and go with him instead.
And how often do you see bookers historically run full ball with the hot hand until it goes too far? So I suppose in that sense, I'll go with the unlucky slant on things and say Billy Graham.
Yeah.
Because in almost any other instance, he'd have had much more than a year's run. I mean, there was no logical reason to necessarily take the belt off him. Business was still doing great. He was incredibly over. I do roll my eyes sometimes when they sort of talk about 20 years ahead of the time and all that sort of thing, just because it seems so fawning in nature. But, you know, there's certainly a case there that he was absolutely ahead of the curve, and you could have run with him for years and years. So for him to lose the belt solely off the back of Vince McMahon Sr. deciding, well, I want to put the belt on Backlund by this date regardless, then, you know, that is incredibly unfortunate for him.
But on the fortunate side for Backlund, I mean, such a long run. And again, I wasn't there at the time, so maybe this is unfair for me to say, but I certainly don't see the popularity base with Backlund that there is with Bruno.
Well, yeah, that was the question I was going to ask. What was the motivating factor behind Backlund?
So with
Bruno, there was a fan base there, there's something there already. What did Backlund have in his favour?
Vince Sr. wanted a Jack Briscoe style champion, a straight-laced, credible wrestling guy, and then obviously the manic characters would be all around, you know, so there's a rock of credibility.
Yeah, because obviously because Backlund couldn't talk, so the talking was all coming from
Lou Albano, usually.
Lou Albano, the Grand Wizard, things of that nature.
Moving on to one here that is going to be quite funny. C4 from Wrestling Forum says, there's only one answer for this. This wrestler had built a huge heel following as a member of the Skyscrapers in WCW in 1989, only to see his career sidetracked by a punctured lung in November of that year. After coming back as a member of the Four Horsemen, in April of 91, he was offered a substantial raise to his contract and a guaranteed world title run, and turned it down to join the WWF as their next Hulk Hogan. Yet immediately after signing, the steroid scandal broke, and shortly thereafter, Ric Flair also joined the WWF, making his franchise player run less certain. Nonetheless, this man was reported by Alex Marvez in September of 91 to be scheduled to win the WWF world title at Tuesday in Texas by beating The Undertaker, only to suffer a torn triceps weeks later. By the time he would return, Vince McMahon had changed course and booked Ric Flair to win the title, and turned this guy heel. There was to be no franchise face run, and he was replaced by a returning Ultimate Warrior. When you think about bad timing and injuries during his initial WWF run and what could have happened otherwise, Sid Vicious has to be considered the most unlucky wrestler ever.
Let's talk softball, folks.
Well, before you do, taking a more contrarian approach to that and espousing a view that I think you're probably more inclined to share, Carl, Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum says, my first thought for luckiest was instantly SCG favourite good old Sid Vicious. I can't think of another wrestler that received more cracks at stardom with the big two and even runs with both their world titles despite leaving either company on bad terms previously and having a CV that reads like the A to Z of unprofessionalism and unreliability. After an unspectacular run in WCW and big money move to the WWF, the guy failed a drug test on the eve of his contractually guaranteed Hogan at Mania payday, then fucked off two matches into his run with that other bastion of reliability, the Ultimate Warrior, purely in protest at having to serve his suspension for that failure. WCW took the punt on bringing him back, and when Sid was on the cusp of winning their world title, he got himself fired for one of the most well-documented cases of unprofessional conduct in mainstream wrestling history. This, of course, being stabbing Arn Anderson. In spite of that, and the manner of his previous departure, the WWF brought him back in as Shawn's bodyguard, as anachronistic as it may have seemed during the New Generation era. Sid would then piss off when he couldn't be bothered doing the tag team title run with the Kid, and yet the company turned to him again when our mate Warrior left him in the lurch. Quite how Sid's record of going for a walk when things went against him made him seem like deserving a run with a WWF title, I know not. But he somehow grabbed himself two of them at a time when the title story should have 100% been about Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. As discussed recently on your Monday Night War series, good old Sid then repeatedly exaggerated injuries to avoid jobs to Bret or Mankind, and then fucked off again. Incredibly, after working for a few nostalgia pops in ECW, Vicious earned himself a third run in WCW in spite of the manner of his previous departure and his misdemeanors up north. If it sounds like I'm getting exasperated typing this, I am. Sid looked even more stupidly past his day than when he'd gone back to the WWF, and yet somehow he was soon the WCW champion. Seriously, have I missed something? Why the hell did people keep giving the man second chances when he burned them over and over again?
Big.
Because he's big. That's it.
Where did I put my squeegee?
next to your scissors.
I think Air Raid pretty much summed it up there. You can't really follow that, can you? It would be incredibly difficult to bemoan any bad luck that you may perceive Sid to have in that initial WWF run or very, very early NWA run with the injuries there, considering the multitude of chances he got despite any discernible talent and despite all the unprofessional acts he conducted, whether it's getting into fights with Brian Pillman, the stabbing of Arn, as you reference, and multiple times just walking off to go and walk some bases.
I think the Sid Vicious career is a story of karma, really. You know, maybe a bit of bad luck at the start, so then the karma police think, oh, he needs a bit, so we'll give him some. 10 years later or whatever, the karma police again looked up the Sid report and thought, oh fuck, we've given him too much, so they had his leg fall off to really even it all out.
It's got nothing to do with karma, it's got everything to do with just being a dumb fuck. Yes, Johnny Ace, I'll jump off the top rope and land on one leg. I'm only 6'10 and 300 pounds, what could possibly go wrong?
If the karma police actually existed, then I hope karma fucked them in the ass as well for forcing us to have the good side of Sid Vicious's career. I
mean, there was just no good side.
Yeah, the only unlucky thing I'd ever put for Sid Vicious was the leg breaking, but even then, it made me laugh. So, was it really that unlucky?
No, it's not unlucky. He was just an idiot.
But the one, and of all the ones to get to me, the one that got to me was the final run in WCW when he got the title in 2000. That's what really got me, because then it was just like, but this guy's fucking useless. You can't rely on the guy. He doesn't want to do the job. And in case you don't remember, he main evented the lowest grossing WrestleMania of all time. And yet you think he is not just a viable, but the best option to be your champion. By that point, I'm thinking, that is beyond luck. That's just like some sort of strange deal with the devil or something that was going on.
Yeah, so even talking about the bad luck there, as Seaford said, it's like sometimes luck balances itself out quite nicely. The reason he got those initial chances was because of the body, steroid enhanced. The reason he got the injury is because of the body, steroid enhanced. So there you go, it plays itself out naturally. I don't think, also I will say, just as a little fact check thing, Dave Meltzer has debunked the idea that Sid was supposed to win the belt at Tuesday in Texas, even though Alex Marvez did report it in September of 91, but I don't think, according to Meltzer at least, that was actually the plan.
I'd say this guy's even freaking worse than Nash, really, on this scale. Because, I mean, at least with Nash, it's like Kieran Stane, at least Nash had some sort of emote charisma about
him.
Funny. He had some charm about him. He had a good look. He looked kind of cool, at least. But, like, fucking Sid, with the freaking blonde poodle perm.
For all Nash's faults, at least Nash could talk. And Sid sure as shit couldn't. And anyone who doesn't believe me, go back and watch that In Your House promo.
Sorry, pal, we're live. BPS21 from FOW says, Miz is the luckiest. Everything about him is lower mid-card. WWE champion, main events mania, marries a 10. And also, Stylish one from FOW says, I think Miz takes the win as the luckiest guy in wrestling history. I still cannot figure out how he got all of that, and probably never will.
Well, I'm not really into blondes, but still, yeah, dude's got some luck.
Yeah?
I mean, Can you remember him on the real world or when he first came in? God.
Yeah, oh, he's the most annoying bastard. I just did not want to see this guy
but
ever.
That was his talent, I guess, being an annoying bastard.
He's made a career out of being the most annoying, irritating bastard to ever grace a wrestling TV screen.
Look, I think there's a place for him, but in the main event of WrestleMania, it is not.
No, it's the Honky Tonk Man spot is what it is. I remember at the time there were people who were supporters of the Miz. Carl, we spoke to some friends of yours that were big Miz supporters at the time of his big push. And I remember it being based. Yeah, gee, you were too. I remember.
Sorry, Carl.
There were people who were into him in 2010, and it was based on a couple of really good promos he did on Raw, give the devil his due, that felt like major league promos, but they weren't consistent.
It is one promo.
It was one or two.
It was one. It was the one when he's walking from the bar.
And talking about the fried chicken on the bag and stuff like that.
Yeah, really good promo, but he's a fun, wacky, mid-card utility guy, but no more.
I'd even go a bit more extreme than that. I don't even think he's a good mid-card utility guy. I think he is so incredibly phony in everything he does. We can talk about the contrived nature of scripted promos, but not once, although possibly once with the one promo you've referenced there, not once have I ever sat there and thought he conveyed anything close to authenticity. you see him as the talking head on all the DVDs. Talking about, you know, the pro wrestling fan. It's so fake. It's so false.
I remember watching this with my college buddies, and we were like, oh!
It's such absolute horseshit. You're right, Liam. There was some sort of bizarre groundswell for him. He has got far more out of the business than he ever deserved. A multitude of other people who, if they were cutting promos as badly as he was cutting them when he first came up, when they were doing the Diva Surge, and the little thing he was doing there.
Oh, yeah, he looked at his wrist,
got tongue-tied, started stuttering, stammering. You know, if that was someone who hadn't come from the real world and reality TV, they would have been shit-canned instantly. The best use for him, if you're going to have him on TV, if you insist upon it, I think JR's got it right. He should be a manager, because at least then you can get away with the snivelling chicken shit unauthentic bollocks that he spouts.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of the guys that did support him during that kind of United States title run leading up to the WWE championship reign. Got a little bit better when he was teamed with Morrison. That was an entertaining tag team for the short-lived as it was. I think it was just when he was doing like the United States title run, I just kind of bought a little bit more into him, because it seemed like they were getting like, you know, behind them. Not necessarily the audience, but the company as well.
I have a question. How much of the Miz groundswell came because he was one of the first guys that got to call out John Cena at the time when he was the US champion?
Probably that.
Yeah.
Because at that point, and I've talked about this so many times, about how there's been no new stars created over like a certain time period. There's only been little glimpses of it, you know, with Edge and later on CM Punk. Miz was just one of those guys where I just wanted to see something different from John Cena, Batista and Randy Orton, that I just saw an opportunity to miss. So maybe I gravitated towards him as out of sheer hope for something different.
But again, lucky.
Again, lucky. As a character-wise, I think he's good.
Yes.
I think he's good because he's a twat.
He's okay. Good. He's just not main event good.
Yeah, yeah. You just look at him and you think, this guy's a fucking prick. It's just like, that's what the guy is. And I think, like, I think it's probably too soon for him, but I quite like Carl's idea when he said, like he ends up being like a mouthpiece for someone, because they're not doing anything with him in ring wise. They're just wasting him. He's just, well,
because he can't go in the ring.
I was going to say, why are they, I don't see how they're wasting him. To waste him would be to suggest you're taking this great talent and not putting him in good matches, not having him go over. He's not a good talent in the ring.
King Pitcast from the UK Fan Forum with another suggestion here. Albert, this cunt wins by a million miles. He's never even
fucking out.
He's never even approached being anything other than completely fucking useless. Yet WWE decided in 2001 that he's going to be a big star someday and pushed him like it for years and years. He beat John Cena and CM Punk in 2012. None of his pushes worked. They screwed over far better prospects in the process, and even after they finally gave up on that dream, they threw the bastard loads of work in NXT. He's even fallen into the head coach spot because build them up made people get their asses out. Yeah, good suggestion here, because whether it's lucky, but you could probably use the broad sweeping brush of big guys that happen to be wandering in at a certain point in time. Lucky to be born big, and that's certainly the case with Albert here, because Vince wasn't the only supporter. Laurinaitis loved him, Finlay loved him. Yeah, there were a lot of people that saw big things in him. I don't give him any points of unluckiness for being given the Tensai gimmick.
Really?
No. What's he going to do? Be Giant Bernard and then fail to get over with that name instead? He wasn't going to get over as a main event guy no matter what.
Rank average.
Might not have turned out good, but it could have been better.
It would have been better. However, regardless of what he had, he had about 10 different gimmicks in the WWE, and none of them worked anyway. So to me, it's the same end result.
Absolutely. It doesn't matter. Is the Lord Tensai gimmick a horrible gimmick? Absolutely. Would not make any attempt to justify that gimmick whatsoever. It doesn't matter how you choose to package old 8 3/8 when you bring him back. It's still Albert, and that's all anyone's ever going to see.
Arrogantly Grateful from Wrestling Forum says, I think Shawn Michaels has been kind of lucky, especially with all the things he's done that other talents would have been fired for on the spot. The WrestleMania 10 incident, for example. I don't take away Shawn's talent by any means. The dude was very talented and he has been very lucky throughout his career for sure. The WrestleMania 10 incident he's referring to there is going long in the ladder match and making it so the 10-man tag got bumped So the guys missed a pay-per-view payoff, and Savage was livid with Sean for that. In terms of ducking title defenses, especially in 97, there's a lot of things that Sean did that most people would be punished for if it wasn't for the fact that he was a valuable commodity at the time. So.
Yeah, no doubt. And circumstances at the time as well. I think, you know, in many ways, similar to the Sid scenario, why he got getting chances of that situation in the business at the time. So WWF was too scared to let him go, and knowing those circumstances existed probably played into why he pulled so much shit, probably.
And just to segue this into the next point, Fraser B from the UK Fan Forum says, for a lucky wrestler, I'd say Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Yes, they worked hard, had great matches, and deserved to be stars in the 90s, but I strongly suspect, however, that if the steroid shit hadn't hit the fan when it did, they'd have been stuck in sort of an Arn Anderson or Ricky Steamboat great mid-card guy spot for a lot longer, if not permanently.
I think that's an excellent point, and I think it's given Vince's track record and what he did in later years, and certainly some of the people that have been brought up from developmental from time to time who had no business being brought up, it's difficult to argue that necessarily it could have quite easily happened, right, wrong or otherwise. Just going back briefly to the previous email, I was slightly worried there when he mentioned Lucky, because I thought it was going to be one of those sort of trolling efforts or one of those hipster arguments against HBK. But in terms of the sort of the slant he put on, I can very much see a case from being incredibly lucky, and as Kieran said, the circumstances playing a huge role, and that he's undeniably talented and great, and I give him props for going long in that ladder match, because I certainly wasn't crying over losing the 10-man tag. It's an interesting take on things there, to look at the sort of the luckiness from that perspective.
Especially when you think like 93, 94, 95, Sean really didn't have a lot of capital to be pulling that kind of stuff, and he refusing to lose the belt. Sean, you know, he had a rep.
I think Sean was lucky in that, you know, Diesel and Razor Ramon both left, and so created an environment that he could manipulate, so he could
be the guy.
He could be the guy, yeah.
Yeah, there was no real challenge for that spot at the time. Snake Eyes from Wrestling Forum, also on the subject of one of the two men we just mentioned. I'd argue that Bret Hart was pretty unlucky, facing into the dawn of the Attitude Era and the tumultuous years that followed that infamous night in Montreal. Frank Drebin from TPWW says, Bret Hart spending his whole career in the WWF being injury-free, then soon after going to WCW getting kicked in the head by Greenberg, effectively ending his career, is pretty unlucky. Not saying he's the unluckiest guy out there, but that one incident is pretty bad. And Raw is Botchamania from WrestlingForum.com says, I'd say Bret Hart is near the top of being unlucky. Born into a wrestling dynasty, training himself to be one of the best wrestlers of his time, connecting with fans big time, then not jumping ship to WCW when he had the chance, instead becoming the champion in the worst era of the WWF, needing to follow Hulk Hogan, who just screwed him over in the torch passing. Then he had incredible matches in the worst circumstances, helped keep the company afloat, then was told by McMahon that he couldn't afford his new contract, getting screwed out of his title in favour of the biggest crime baby in history, jumped ship to WCW just as they began to screw up left and right, getting cut off by Hogan again, was put in ridiculous mid-card matches against guys like Evan Courageous, even though he was at the time arguably the best of the big names, tragically lost his brother, making his interest in wrestling even less, and just when he won the WCW title, finally, for the first time, shortly thereafter received a career-ending injury in a match against the guy whom he wanted to face for a long time. Afterwards, his contract was unceremoniously terminated, and one of the best wrestlers of all time went out with nary someone caring.
Yeah, I'll say to an extent, I wouldn't necessarily say unlucky when it comes to WCW, because he got paid quite a lot of fucking money.
He got $3 million a year.
Yeah, he got paid a lot of money, and I don't think Bret could seriously turn around and say that he fully expected to be used properly in that company. Absolutely turn around and say he was unlucky with Owen's death, you know, and other problems within the family, and also just the you know, the injury to his head as well, being unlucky. And that injury has kind of had like a domino effect later on in life and so on, has made certain things difficult for him at different points as well.
Stroke, which he kind of tied back to that, and, you know, at least in his own opinion, whether that's true or not.
On the subject of the stroke, I think Bret is seriously reaching with that one.
Thank you, Dr. Jones.
A stroke is still unlucky, though. it's a horrible thing.
I will say now, and granted, this is probably way too late in the podcast to even start talking about quantifying this discussion, but I was trying to keep personal tragedies and stuff like that, because there's no way that Owen Hart isn't the number one guy in this list, you know? So, yeah, Magnum TA2 got mentions, but...
They all go into the same category of, well, no shit.
A different kind of bad luck,
It was just that thing, it was just kind of like again, another, it's that domino effect, it's another thing, you know, he gets the Montreal incident, he gets the WCW, gets misused, problems with families and so on, brother dies who he's most closest to, you know, it was just one of those things where it just kept knocking a guy down. It's not too dissimilar from what we were talking about with Daniel Bryan after such a peak of his career to suddenly just be snowballing where people are dying and other injuries are happening to him. It's literally the same story.
Moving along here, Derek R. Hubbard from F4W says, Diamond Dallas Page was the benefactor of favourable luck. Not to dismiss his skills, but when you compare DDP to the crop of mid and lower card talent in WCW in 96 to 99, it is amazing that he's one of the three stars, the others being Goldberg and Booker T, not established by the WWE, that made it to the main event scene in WCW. Consider this, DDP main evented numerous WCW pay-per-views, and Benoit Guerrero, Jericho and Mysterio never were given that opportunity.
It pays to have prime real estate and a yearly membership to the Gold Club.
It's amazing how much a cup of sugar can help, can't it?
We've talked about DDP before, and I'm not as negative on him as some people are, in the sense of I think he did have some good matches and he did get over with that crowd to a large extent at times. But it's undeniable he doesn't get that initial push and that initial focus if he's not friends with Bischoff
or Nash and Hall.
But your point stands to reason. The number of times that because we talk about the NWO and we talk about how Flair was buried, we talk about how we think if Arn hadn't had the injury and stuck around, he would have been buried before Sting. But in terms of those several initial instances where Babyface was outsmarting the NWO and getting one up on them, it was DDP, and it certainly wouldn't have been him as the chosen one had it not been for his associations. He made the most of it eventually after that. But those associations certainly helped give him the old leg up.
I think where DDP's kind of luck really kind of lies was, for me, as a fan of DDP, was the luck that he was given an opportunity to become a star at quite a late stage
in his life.
You know, because it's like it's not a common place for someone. I can't remember what age he exactly
started
was.
At 36.
36. I mean, that's a lot. There's not many people today that would be given an opportunity, because particularly in today's product where, you know, they want them young so that they, you know, they've gone for as long as possible, you know, they can milk the cow dry. But so I think DDP was lucky in that sense, where when they saw DDP, they didn't see the limitations in terms of how long they would have him for. They just kind of went, let's just go with it, see if we can get something out of it, and you know, all good if we can. So I think he was lucky that no one saw that limitation in him.
I think he's lucky, because we talked about it before on the I think Saving WCW show.
Yeah,
so many talented mid-card guys there at various points who they didn't maximise or push or give an opportunity. Like, did great for himself, so no knocking him in that respect. But I think, yeah, it's the associations got him a chance that so many others probably deserved and didn't get. So I call him lucky. And Kimberly was pretty fit as well. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was lucky. Yeah.
Chuck that up into the Miz category.
Jesus, Lou.
Dominator from TPWW, also on the subject of DDP, says, unlucky in the late WWF era. Has a match on SmackDown in April 2002 and gets injured, that's with Bob Holly, and is forced to retire because his own insurance company says if he continues to wrestle, they'd drop him from coverage. It was all covered on an episode of Confidential. I just think there's a huge chance that he would have been able to come back. He would have had one or two world title runs, which... in that era, in that element, I do not believe, unfortunately. Not necessarily in terms of his fault, but in terms of navigating that company, his goose was cooked the second he came in, pretty much.
As soon as he took the mask off.
Yeah, he was doomed from the start, and once you get into the motivational speaker gimmick, which, you know, it invariably has a ceiling on it, and that ceiling doesn't get you to the world title.
John from F4W says, Matt Hardy is canny unlucky. His brother got all the looks and charisma. He was chiffed to bits when he won the ECW world title, when at the same time Jeff had the WWE title. His mate shagged his lass, and he's the one that ends up getting fired.
I wouldn't agree on unlucky, but definitely on unlucky just for that, you know. His missus gets shagged by his friend, and he's the one that gets fired, you know, and he has to, like, get his job back.
Yeah, flip side of that is, what was she doing with him in the first place?
That's probably the lucky side of it, but it's just unlucky loser, really.
Yeah, loser being the optimum word. He was lucky to be Jeff's brother.
think that's
something.
And I absolutely agree with Kieran there, and I have an incredibly low opinion of Jeff Hardy as it is. So no, when it comes to Matt Hardy, the joke is like, yeah, it is a bit of a damn kick in the balls when you get cheated on and you get fired as a result. But in terms of the way he was treated in the ring, I always thought he was a decent worker. Never thought he was outstanding. And the guy couldn't talk a lick, so, you know.
See, we're going to disagree here, because I thought Matt Hardy version 1 had it going on for a little while there.
The version 1 and the Matt facts I found incredibly entertaining, but again, it's a gimmick with a ceiling.
Yeah, it is. But still, 450 from TPWW, Jeff Hardy is one lucky guy. With the bumps he's taken in his history of substance abuse, I'm shocked he isn't in a wheelchair or worse. Hell, I'm shocked he's seen as employable by any company for as long as he was. So, yeah, in terms of bad luck too, because Matt Hardy was very over in like 2005, 2006 time when he came back. And no matter what, they just had him losing to Tatanka and all these fucking scrubs on SmackDown. Jeff, in terms of being lucky, yeah, I can see the case there in terms of a guy who's taking so many risks, and you look at the guys, you know, I mean, even at his age, he's still taking bumps off the fucking cage onto steps in TNA and this stupid shit.
Well, yeah, he's incredibly fortunate that his health has held up to the extent it has, considering the way he
Unless he's on his dirt bike, of course.
Well, yeah, different story. But he was very lucky to get that second chance with the WWE, considering the way he was 86 in the first go around,
crystal meth addiction, yeah, and all that.
And then when you get to TNA and I forget the name of the pay-per-view with Sting now.
Victory Road.
Yeah, instances such that the fact that he wasn't fired from that company immediately,
but again,
it speaks to the incompetence of that company.
It's the Nash principle.
At the same time, I think he's probably going to end up being like the Keith Richards of professional wrestling, where like he's still going to be around longer than other people who are healthier and in better condition than him. He's basically going to be like the Walking Dead.
Speaking of junkies, I want to give my personal choice for unluckiest wrestlers, Van Damme, when he got pulled over.
Is that bad luck, or is that again dumb fuck shit?
No, because of all the years of smoking weed, that's the time he gets pulled over? Yeah. That's unlucky.
Yeah, it's not. Something tells me it wasn't his first time.
But don't we already have our version that you referenced there, Gene Jake Roberts?
Well, yeah, we may get to him later on, as a matter of fact. Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum says, Mark Henry, lucky he got that ridiculously long contract in 96, because if he was just on a 2, 3, 4, 5, or maybe even 6-year deal, they'd definitely have binned him long ago. He eventually became a really effective big man, a good hand, and a really decent promo, but it took a lot of time. He's even lucky when you consider the talent around the roster in the early 2000s. There's not a chance he'd have been kept around with that competition if they didn't have to. He's pretty lucky to still be employed now, I think. He's been utterly injury-prone these last few years. Which, to be honest, has been utterly injury prone since he first came in. He broke his leg in training running off the ropes in 96, so this is this is not new. But again, I agree completely, because Mark Henry, there were several times, I remember, Carl, in 2006 when his contract finally came up, and then hearing the news, he's been extended for one more year, and it's like, are you fucking kidding me?
In fact, I may have had a pint in my hand at the time, and it was only the one I stressed, but I was absolutely astounded when you came and told me the news that Mark Henry had been renewed. And the email is absolutely right there. If it had been anything other than a 10-year contract, and again, we're talking the circumstance of the time, Vince needing new talent, particularly in 96 when he's really starting to sort of feel the I kept reaching for it. I kept coming back to the burn. That's not right. Particularly when he's feeling the pressure from WCW, you know, that desire to have new talent and someone sort of an Olympic pedigree of sorts. You know, you can see that how the circumstances certainly benefited Mark Henry there, because it wouldn't have happened in almost any other era of pro wrestling.
And again, just the time when the contract expired, it fell in 2006, one of the most notoriously wank years, in my opinion, especially on the SmackDown side that WWE ever had, to the point where there was such a little depth that they, in their own mind, I guess they felt they needed a guy that they could be just there as a heel.
Okay, what was on the subject of befuddling longevity, It's been like an hour, and can we say Kane now?
All right, let me get to it here. Gilbert returns from WrestlingForum.com, says, luckiest wrestler ever is Glenn Jacobs. Can you think of any scenario where he could be a 20-year employee for the WWF if Undertaker didn't need a storyline brother? Before that, he's Dr. Isaac Yankum and Fake Diesel. You're talking about a guy who's never had a four-star match in 20 years, but he's a surefire Hall of Famer. Don't get me wrong, he's by no means untalented, and I'm not criticizing him per se. He's just lucky someone in 97 thought of the Kane character, and he was the nearest big man that could pull it off.
Yep, absolutely, without a doubt, surely the luckiest employee in that company. How many millions has he taken that from that company, which I feel he's taken out of my pocket as a fan of the company? He has everyone's worst match of the year. Okay, like, he'll probably put over Brock sometime in the next
better.
6 months.
If he even touches Brock Lesnar, I'll be appalled.
Oh, he'll get more than you'll want. Oh. Befuddling. What does he know? What does he know to keep him in a job?
Yeah, he knows something. He knows where the bodies are buried. This seems custom made for you guys.
Well, I'm sat here and I'm trying to think to myself, what can I say about Kane that I haven't already said before? I think the most entertaining time he ever had a microphone in his hand is when he also had the voice box, just because it cracked me up. The email there said he never had a four-star match. One star?
Okay, that's like carried away. Come on now.
Look. There was intrigue to the character initially. And I will say, okay, for the first 6 to 8 months, maybe. After that, everything else he's ever done, whether you want to throw in the orderlies, you know, member of the corporation, even for one night, the fact that he took the belt off Steve Austin is criminal. Absolutely criminal.
That's what it is, isn't it?
That's like one, two, three,
it's the one thing that chaps his ass.
I think that Glenn Jacobs' body of work, in many respects, I feel disgusted with myself calling it a body of work, what he has perpetrated speaks for itself.
So much for that not burying Kane this episode, huh?
I don't feel quite as much hatred as Carl does. I think the one real kind of lucky side is how the fuck anyone does care, and there's probably some surely still care after the amount of character changes at 180s or whatever. This guy was supposed to be burnt all over apart from one arm, then he changes to a singlet, so he's like, well, he's not burnt on his upper body. Then he reveals a bit more of his mask, and so he's like, oh, so he's not burnt really that much on his face. He wasn't supposed to be able to talk, but then he could use a voice box, then he could talk. He takes his mask off and it reveals not only is he not burnt, but he's also ugly and bald, and he's been wearing a wig and mascara.
He used to be a dentist
and he used to, you know, think he ran on diesel power. So there's like so many different things that they've done with this fucking character, and yet it's still around. Yet someone in that company still thinks like this character can still work. Some people have obviously turned around and said, get to fuck, get out of here. But the fact that some people might still actually consider him like a viable character. Yeah. That's the thing, the Kane character itself, not Glenn Jacobs, but the character is still viable after so many ups and downs and 180s and whatever.
Well, it's not viable, that's the point. And the frustrating thing is, we could have avoided all this pain and misery, and instead we've been suffering this, where he's taking up TV time that other human beings could have used.
Smelly Meatball from TPWW says, Matt Capitelli, famous for co-winning a Tough Enough season and the vicious beating Bob Holly gave him on the show, ended up being the start of a string of injuries and bad luck that led him never getting called up from developmental. To make matters worse, his career got cut abruptly because of a brain tumour. KRZ151 from FOW says, I feel Matt Capitelli has to be one. Was about to get called up to the main roster and got injured. Was about to get called up to the main roster again and got brain cancer. Loopy Date from TPWW says, Capitelli has to be very high on the unlucky list. He looked every bit as promising coming out of Tough Enough as Johnny Nitro, and had some really entertaining stuff in OVW with his fellow Tough Enough winner and guys like Jeter and Skyfire. Would he have been a megastar? Probably not, but it's terribly unlucky that he never got his shot at the big time. I was a big Capitelli fan, so I had high hopes for Matt Cap.
I never saw a lot of his work in OVW, to tell you the truth, but that aside, it is an incredibly unfortunate story that befell the poor guy. I mean, the liberties that Bob Holly took is something I think also needs to be mentioned as well. God. Just because...
I didn't think it was that bad. I really didn't.
In terms of physically what was done, it probably wasn't that bad. But the fact that he that Holly felt the need to, the fact that it was allowed to happen on a young kid, and the fact that so many of Bob Holly's peers felt that this was perfectly acceptable to shoot on the kid and just gloss it aside, oh, that's Bob being Bob, the kid's just got to suck it up, I just felt was absolutely appalling.
Yeah, again, whenever it's injury or illness, it's obviously bad luck, but the fact that it was, you know, multiple times on the verge of getting a call up, didn't even get the chance.
It's no.
But hey, at least the Bob beat and give him a bit of babyface shine for a while.
Yeah.
A bit of sympathy.
Yeah, a bit of sympathy. I thought he had like a real kind of, I know this is a very strange comparison, but very Jeff Hardy-ish likability. Like, he just had a nice, as a babyface, I just liked him a lot. Like, and again, I'm not going to pretend that I saw all of his OVW stuff, but the stuff I did see with him and Johnny G, which is the Thrill Seekers, and then later Capitoli going on to be the OVW champion, he's not going to be a big top guy straight away, but the potential's there for him to grow on the audience and become a big deal in a strange kind of way. So I just thought there's potential there, and it is sad that he never got a chance.
Even if he does fail, as you say, you know, he deserves the chance. If he's going to fail, at least, you know, at least let him sort of fail on his merits, as opposed to something like this where he just never gets the opportunity. And you know, it's one thing to never get called up, as some wrestlers have found in the past. It's a complete other issue when it's something, you know, injury's one thing, something that's life threatening like cancer is another ballpark altogether.
I remember watching his like farewell speech basically to the company and so on, and like and just being quite sad. As you said, it's the loss of an opportunity. We can't really state for certain whether he'd been successful or not to a reasonable extent, whatever your personal opinion is of this guy. I think you could say the same with Chris Nowinski as well. He got a little bit more of an opportunity than Matt. You know, he appeared on pay-per-views, but again, it was just an opportunity missed. He might have not ended up being something, but it's always a shame when you don't even get a chance. That's always the key thing.
Moving on here, LCC from the UK fan forum says, Mark Jindrak can consider himself unlucky being dropped from the Evolution stable. He had a great look, and although his work at the time was limited, he was no worse than Orton or Batista at the time. Those guys were made by getting the rub with Hunter and Flair, and seeing how he's progressed to now to be a very accomplished worker in Mexico, I think he would have had a decent chance of a good mid-card run both in and after the group. Regardless of what you think of him as a talent, getting chucked from Evolution was super unlucky.
Not just Evolution, but I think like a lot of Jindrak was kind of like unlucky. I mean, you know, obviously being in WCW at a time where it was just a pile of shit, you know, he's just like one person within a company that was fledgling anyway, and there was like a certain degree of talent even when he was green, and he had like a good look. I mean, okay, not necessarily like good on the mic or anything, but it's just like, you know, the guy was young, for Christ's sake, and I haven't seen any of his stuff in Mexico, but I have heard that he's
Marco Corleone.
Yeah, I have heard that he's improved a lot, and so yeah, it's a shame that he didn't get into Evolution, because it's like if you really think about it, he wasn't, and it's probably actually why he didn't get in. He wasn't too dissimilar from Randy Orton at that time, because Randy Orton when he first came into the company wasn't like anywhere near the Randy Orton that he would become or what we know now. Well, we can have two of them.
Yeah,
flick a coin. Orton wins. Maybe the fact that his last name was Orton was probably the deciding factor.
Yeah. Nepotism in wrestling? Well, I never.
I was never a fan of Jindrak at all. I just thought he was just the most. No matter what, even when he got his Reflection of Perfection run with Teddy Long in 2004, I thought Jindrak sucked.
Yeah, and then just the balance of the Evolution group, I think it would have been one too many. It's too similar to Orton to have Orton then stand out, and Randy turned out alright, so I think it's probably in the long run it was a good call.
Actually, on the subject of Evolution, SJ5522 from the UK fan forum says, Randy Orton may be a good shout for Lucky. Now, people will point to Triple H hindering his progress, and I'll concur that the Mania 21 main event shouldn't have been anything but Triple H versus a freshly faced Orton. But considering that that's been more than written off, he's been on most of the video game covers, remained constantly in and around the limelight, and can generally jump back into a main event at any point. When I look back at 04 Orton, what I see is a shitload of character value, and the potential there seemed at least as prominent as Cena's, which I don't think has really been tapped into like it could have been in the years that have come since. There just appears to be a very visible difference in enthusiasm levels between Orton now and Orton 11 years ago. He's come off as a bit of a coaster, like Kane. Those two both constantly seem to look like they think they have the world's shittest job or something. So lucky, I guess, in terms of the first opportunity. Similar to Shawn Michaels, as I was mentioned earlier on too, a guy who's been given a lot of chances despite the fact that he was violated company policies on several occasions, including here, Alex from the UK Fan Forum. Does WWE changing its wellness policy specifically to avoid having to fire someone in case of a third strike count as lucky? If so, add another vote for the RKO section. And Tyrion Lannister, WrestlingForum.com says, luckiest Randy Orton and Roman Reigns. These two chumps wouldn't have ever been looked at if it wasn't for their faces and who their father was. But instead, they get treated like the fucking Pope.
So, I like Randy, so I'm not going to back this up.
I like them both.
Because we talk about the nepotism and the family links. I think you can make a case, considering the WWE's MO when looking for new talent, that Reigns arguably would have got a chance without the lineage. I'm not saying it's a cert, but when you consider, you know, someone with that physique, college football player, standout as a college football player, you know, he certainly falls within that remit of people that the company would look at.
XL from TPWW says, Nick Dinsmore was considered a standout in OVW with excellent in-ring credentials, called up to the main roster and saddled with the Eugene gimmick, something that's hard to bounce back from. Sort of a double-edged sword, as he was ridiculously over at the time, and no doubt has dined out on that character for years after, but he never stood a chance of being repackaged or used in a more legitimate way. Although, this is a hard one, because it's like, it's unlucky in the sense that he got saddled with the retard thing, but he was lucky in the sense that it gave him a career that he might have otherwise not had. You know what I mean? If he was like one of the many guys in OVW who just got brought up as a Danny Basham type.
Exactly what I was thinking of Basham's. Been gone within 6 months.
Been gone, no one remembers their role in the business. Whereas at least Eugene, for whatever it is, has a lasting legacy of some kind and gets to milk this forevermore. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, he'd been in OVW for such a long time. The chance of him getting called up, as horrible as it sounds, the chance of him being called up purely on his in-ring ability alone, you know, it wasn't going to happen, because if it was, it would have already happened before the Eugene gimmick. So I think that there's certainly a case we made that it gave him a career he wouldn't otherwise have had. And just so I can make sure I'm covering all my bases here and not referred to as a hypocrite, because I know I have said on other podcasts about mocking the Red Rooster gimmick, and I know from one of the shows we used to listen to back in the day, Liam, there was an argument made that the Red Rooster gave Terry Taylor a career he wouldn't have otherwise already had. He already had a career prior to the Red Rooster.
Yeah, so take that out, Snow. You're wrong. Skulls18 from WrestlingForum.com says, Brutus Beefcake. If you're being generous, he was an okay worker, but this guy got to main event pay-per-views and had a decent career making good money in both WWE and WCW because he was Hogan's friend. I have no issue with the wrestlers putting in a good word for the friends like Bret Hart or The Click would do, but at least make sure they are talented like Owen or Shawn Michaels were. Bad News Gertner, who's I guess been demoted from King at TPWW, says the luckiest is Brutus Beefcake. He got put in a team with Greg Valentine and a run with the tag belts where he basically stood on the apron for 90% of the time. Due to being Hogan's buddy, he kept on getting pushes despite being atrocious, and if anyone disputes this claim, Brutus Beefcake headlined Starrcade.
This is almost sort of the counter-example to DDP, where in the case of DDP, you get someone who gets an opportunity they wouldn't have otherwise had without their associations, but at least in DDP's credit, he worked his arse off, had some good matches, and the crowd got behind him.
And he got better.
Yeah, and he got better. Old Brutai, on the other hand, does get this chance purely through being Hogan's bag carrier. And
Tanner, as you talked
about. And Tanner. Occasional arse sniffer with Bret Hart's drawings or anything to go by. Beefcake's someone who then proceeds to stink up the joint for decades, getting title runs he doesn't deserve, being the first man to beat Perfect on TV, which has always been one of those things that has really stuck in my craw.
And shaped you into the man we know and love today.
Shaped me into the bitter ball of rage that I am today. And then, as you say, goes on to main event Starrcade. I don't know of anyone else, and I'll let the table argue with me if they can think of anyone who's got so much off so little talent, purely off being friends with one person.
No, he takes the biscuit. He really does. My hatred of Beefcake, his relationship with Hogan. This is the guy that gave Tom Six the idea for the Human Centipede. Basically, just surgically mouth to ass on Hogan. It's just this guy, no talent. look like a fucking bell end, and that's just his face. His face was atrocious. His style was just hideous. Where it's just like see-through tights with freaking tennis shoes on. It's just everything about this guy just insults my intelligence. And just when we talk about like things in wrestling, and there has been moments in wrestling which make you thoroughly ashamed to be a wrestling fan and feel kind of slightly embarrassed. Beefcake is one of them for me. Where I just not in terms of like anybody else. I feel ashamed to myself that I'm a wrestling fan when I see Beefcake. That's how much I hate this prick. You know, he wasn't in the main event of WrestleMania 9, but in terms of promotional aspect, it was the main event.
Insulting as a wrestling fan, this guy. It's against the longevity and the continual changes. the changes in fucking shittiest gimmicks of all time.
Booty man.
Just a random thought. Zach Gowan, lucky or unlucky to have one leg?
Ooh. Lucky.
Oh, yeah.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucky. Doesn't get there with that physique and that tan any other way.
Boom, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Good point. Flip side is that he did get that beautiful beaten by the big man, so.
That's amazing.
That was both hideously cruel but also quite poetically beautiful
as well.
It was
the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in wrestling.
Oh, yeah. The F5 was one leg into the post. Yeah. GBH189 from UK Fan Forum says, as dumb as this sounds because he was a massive star, Ted DiBiase. He came close to not only the NWA world title, but the WWF world title, but politics stopped him cold both times. And an air raid from UK Fan Forum says, for unluckiest, I'd actually go with Ted DiBiase too. The guy had a good run, but early on in the WWF, he lost out on a singles title run twice due to unfortunate external circumstances. He was supposed to get the IC title, winning it from Jake Roberts, but he didn't because Roberts' neck injury precluded him from winning it in the first place from the Honky Tonk Man. Secondly, and much discussed, he would have had the big WrestleMania payday, losing the WWF title to Hogan had they not needed to put the belt onto Randy Savage instead, due to Honky refusing to drop the IC belt to Macho Man, and the company feeling they needed to placate Savage with the big belt as a consequence. The $1 million nearly man, he says.
Yeah, I was having a bit of a Twitter conversation with Tim Maher about this one as well, and unlucky not to get the belt and obviously the payday. But at the same time, he had a hell of a career.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, you miss out on some, but he had a great run still. Ball tickler for WCW at the end as well. It's a real tough one for me. I mean, yeah, in terms of like the fandom, you'd like to see good guys get titles.
Yeah.
But in the big picture, he still had a great run. So, he had a memorable career that everyone, and a gimmick that everyone will always remember. So, I think it worked out fine for him in the end.
Yeah.
It's hard to feel too bad for him because, as Kieran said, he did have a pretty damn good career without the title runs. And also the fact that kayfabe being more prevalent at the time, he did get to lead quite a better lifestyle when he was initially brought into the company than...
Given a lot of money and great hotels and stuff like that.
Vince wanted to make sure it all came across as legit, so he got the rub of the green there.
He did indeed. Although the NWA title thing's interesting because I think this was early 80s when he was in that the conversation was going around for him to be the NWA champion. And if my reading is correct, he actually got more votes than anybody else to be the new NWA champion. But it was Fritz von Erich who put the kibosh on it and said he was too green. So there you go.
And one of Fritz's boys probably would have been a better choice
by
any chance.
Funnily enough, that was the argument he made at the time. I think Bill Watts didn't want it either because he had DiBiase. He didn't want to lose dates on DiBiase, but... Again, bad luck there. Adam Bomb, 87 from F4W, says the unluckiest is William Regal. They were going to make him world champion to go along with his King of the Ring and general manager run and feed him with Triple H, but he failed a wellness test for something he didn't realise was illegal. His career never recovered. That is a bit of bad luck. That's 2008, I believe, or when he was the Raw GM and he'd won the King of the Ring.
Yeah. So they were going to put the strap on him.
I don't think that
comes as news to me.
A lot of people kind of reached that conclusion because they realised this was going to be the biggest push of his career. I don't know if they were going to go that far, but if there was ever a chance he was going to, I think that clearly was it.
So it's possibly a case of projection there. A little bit.
I think a lot of people assumed he was winning the title because I think that the idea was after the King of the Ring he was going to feud with Triple H, who was the champion at the time. So I think that's why people came to the conclusion that he was going to win the belt because he was going to feud with Triple H as if he was going to beat him.
Regal's a friend.
I guess so. But yeah, I just briefly before I pass back to Carl, it's just that I felt quite bad for Regal on that one.
I did
too, because I always kind of liked Regal and I thought that. Okay, I didn't think he was going to be like an amazing future world champion forever and ever, but I would have liked to have seen the opportunity opportunity, even if it's just from my perspective of seeing a British guy hold the world title. Would have been quite nice.
What was the failure for them?
Basically, it was a GNC product that ended up later getting banned, but when it got banned after Regal bought it, so Regal was oblivious and just kept using it, and then got it showed up in his system a little while later at the most inconvenient of times. So yeah, that is a bit of bad luck there for Regal, poor guy. On the lucky side, Adam Bomb 87 says Ric Flair lived through a goddamn plane crash. That's pretty hard to top. Embry Fan from F4W says if Ric Flair was sitting in a different seat on a small plane in 1975, he would have likely been dead or disabled. As it was, it's a near miracle that he recovered from a broken back to become arguably the greatest wrestler of the next two decades. And Crap Game 13, also from F4W, says going with Flair coming out of that plane crash and being able to come back and have that kind of career and longevity is the luckiest. Yes, absolutely, sir.
It wouldn't have mattered where he was sitting. If he was the pilot and he'd gone head first, nose first into a fucking mountain, Flair would somehow have survived because Flair's indestructible.
I was going to say, was it the story that that Flair had the umbrella, lightning struck the umbrella, bounced off and hit the guy next to Flair and killed him?
Yeah.
It's apparently a story that Rick tells, which is just...
Okay, Rick, of course he does.
Steve Bochenik says Steve Austin was lucky in the sense that Eric Bischoff was too blind to see the potential that he had and released him. Steve never would have achieved the heights that he did if left buried in the mid-card behind the old fossils.
The Austin one's an interesting one in the sense of... as much as you can look back retrospectively and say what was Bischoff thinking letting Steve Austin go... And as big a Steve Austin fan as I am, and the fact that he jobbed to Hacksaw Jim Duggan in 18 seconds gives me nightmares to this day. It's hard to be too critical of Bischoff in that sense, because you sit there and think, well, none of us could have projected what Austin became from his WCW body of work. But where I consider more of the look for Austin is something we touched on before, in that despite the WWF's mythology of, you know, he said, you know, he cut the Austin 316 promo and off to the races we went. Whereas, as we've discussed in detail during our Monday Night Wars podcast, which and if you find folks can go back and listen to, the circumstances of the time with Brett and Sean going at each other's throats and sort of creating this vacuum that allows Austin to get traction, that enables him to get just more screen time and become a greater presence on the show. When you throw in Sean's personal problems, which means he leaves the company, Brett disappears for a bit in 96, which gives Austin the initial promos as he's sort of really finding his heel character. All those sort of things help to give Austin the platform to build from. So I think there's a case to be made that there's a really big slice of luck there.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The fact that all those things, and as we discussed, that second quarter of 97... really came together at the same time. It was Brett's injury, Sean, you know, not wrestling really at all during that period of time, Sid, who, you know, they'd spent so much time on, again, herniated disc in his back, wink wink. Taker, the fact they had no ready-made challenges for Taker meant that he took a back seat to the US Canada feud, which was all about Steve Austin at the helm. So again, I agree there, a lot of luck.
But I think I'd just say on the flip side to that is we've talked about how at that time Vince really was throwing all kinds of shit against the wall and see what was going to stick. Although Austin was getting these 4 or 5 segments on every single Raw, it was because every little 5-minute segment he had, or even a 2-minute segment, throwaway interview over the phone, it was great. So, okay, yeah, we need to fill time. Well, that works, so we'll do another segment. And so I think, yes, the opportunity was there, and it opened up for him with other guys coming and going, but who's to say, even if they were around, his stuff would still have got over. Sean would still have been a floundering babyface, wanting to go heel. And then it would just worked out as it did anyway, because he was going to get over. When stuff gets over, it gets over.
Gary Thompson says, the Hollywood Blondes. I was gutted politics ended a potentially great tag team, but that was WCW for you. Very unlucky to us fans, but obviously as the years went on, we know where Austin ended up. There is an element of luck there. I understand Steve Austin had to work his arse off too, but luck did play a part. Brian Pillman, on the other hand, was just so unlucky, with a character going somewhere to an early death. Real shame. Ryan Pelly from WrestlingForum.com says, unluckiest Brian Pillman comes to mind. His tag team with Steve Austin is broken up for little reason when they're hitting their stride, leaving him to suffer in the mid-card doing nothing. Then in 96, when he's the talk of the wrestling business and signs with the WWF, he wrecks and shatters his ankle, just bad luck. And Fraser B from the UK Fan Forum also says, the one that jumps straight to mind is Brian Pillman. He comes to WCW, got a good push, had great matches with Flair and Luger, then Jim Herd decides he doesn't like him, so he gets the pushed. The light heavyweight title feud with Liger shoots him back up to prominence during the Kip Fry period, But then Bill Watts comes in, decided Pillman is too small and is overpaid, so jobs Brian out in the hope that he'll quit. Eventually, Pillman gets stuck in a throwaway team with Steve Austin. They totally get over and end up main eventing with Ric Flair. Then politics get in the way, the team break up, and Pillman goes back to jobbing. After a couple of years of nothing, Flying Brian ends up part of the Horsemen, strikes gold with the Loose Cannon character, and becomes the talk of the business. But then just as he signs for big money with the WWF, he crashes his Humvee and almost loses his foot. When he finally gets back in the ring, he's hooked on painkillers and winds up dead within a year. Never had someone seemed on the right track so many times, only for it to be swept away. We've talked a lot about Brian Pillman in the past, so I don't think we need to touch on this point too much, other than everything that's been said there is completely dead on accurate, as far as I'm concerned. Certainly had so many stop-start chances and just got cut off every single time, despite whether it was successful or not.
Absolutely. I think the one that at least sticks in my mind the most is the car wreck, as opposed to the other instances, because of WCW being what WCW is, and you could have very easily seen the cycle repeating itself if he'd stayed there. But the car wreck strikes me as the most unfortunate, because as we said before, with that Loose Cannon gimmick, in the confines of the Attitude Era, it was just custom made for him. So who knows just how long a career he could have had, how much money he would have been able to make, and finally get the sustained push and recognition that he deserved.
Theo Diaz from TPWW says, I'd like to suggest Jake Roberts as a victim of bad luck. He was doing well in Georgia when the territory was bought out by the WWF. His program with Hogan fell apart when the fans went the wrong way. His program with Warrior fell apart when Warrior was fired, suspended, what have you. And he had a fat contract with WCW Torpedo because Bill Watts has some kind of butt hurt for the man. Also, you guys have mentioned his awful WrestleMania record before, which maybe really isn't luck, but he definitely didn't get any breaks when it came to those matches.
Jake is a strange one in the sense of, I don't really know how much of this is true and how much of this is Jake being Jake. I mean, we've all seen that DVD. Bill Watts wasn't, you know, you could talk about Jake's misfortune, but Bill Watts wasn't paying anyone good money and was deliberately trying to break contracts just to see the Steiners at the time.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much of that's true.
Yeah, I've never seen the footage of the supposed angle with Hogan where the fans apparently cheered for him over Hogan, but again, the most credible witness for this is Jake Roberts on his own DVD, so it's tough to say. Although I can see, in a sense, bad luck in the sense of he was always kind of doomed to be in a certain position, but then again, I think that's that sign of the times, and I don't think that's necessarily any more bad luck for him than anybody else at the time. And again, a lot of his own bad luck was brought on by himself anyway, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, with regards to his position, let's face it, Hogan is the be-all, end-all of that company, and whether it's Jake or whether it's anyone else, no one's getting elevated above Hogan.
Yeah, I do see the point, though, with his heel turn with Warrior, because I think that was projected to be quite a big deal. When Warrior was gone, they pretty much just shoehorned it immediately to Savage. That was destined to end one way for Jake, so...
But then by the same token, I think, you know, the Warrior feud would have ended up the same way, if not even in a more even pronounced way.
Perhaps so. Mercenary from TPWW Forum says, Muhammad Hassan. He was supposed to win the World Heavyweight title, and then London happens, and then he's gone. Savio from TPWW also agreed with this one, said, rumoured to be winning the title. If the attack happened on any other day, or didn't happen at all, the character would have continued to grow.
Muhammad Hassan, and just generally 2005, I was kind of been watching a few bit of 2005 back recently, and I kind of actually find that year quite fascinating as a whole. And one of the aspects of it is Muhammad Hassan, and just like how quickly this guy... who I personally thought there was something to him, but he was obviously green as hell and was brought up far too soon in a gimmick which was always going to create the wrong kind of heat, no matter whether the London bombings happened or not. There was always going to be that quite close to the mark. But yeah, I always thought, yeah, he was quite unlucky that, not necessarily the London bombings happened, because that shit's kind of well out of his hands, but more just the...
Or wasn't it?
Well, no. More, he was unlucky due to the ineptness of the writing's crew with that angle in particular, the one that got him into trouble on SmackDown.
Wire one.
Yeah, the SmackDown with the elitist whatever.
Do you know whose idea that was?
Go on,
Ted DiBiase.
Really?
Yep.
A man of God.
Yeah. Was that before or after he found God?
After.
To think that angle was okay, whether bombings happened or not. It was always something that was going to go close to the mark. They were always riding the line with his character, which I think was a shame. I don't know how much into the business he was, because that's the thing, because once he'd done that and they said, oh, we're going to move you back to OVW and repackage you, he just went, nah, fuck that. I'm just leaving. So it obviously wasn't that interested, but it's kind of a shame, because it's like, while some people might thought he might have been being limited. We don't know how that would have developed in time, you know, if he got more experience and so on.
It's a bit of a weird one, really, isn't it? Because he looks into a push or a perceived push that he wasn't in a position in terms of experience and ability to receive. So he's lucky because of his look, and not meaning that in a racist way. Pretty obvious. That's why that's why he was given the character, and because it's a topical gimmick at the time. But it's almost he's at the same time he's unlucky because it's so topical that when some shit actually goes down, you can no longer do the gimmick. So yeah. It's kind of a chicken and the egg one for me, really. But yeah, the fact that he then just left the business completely probably says more about him and his state of mind and his passion to be in it than anything else, I would say.
Norman Smiley from TPWW says, luckiest I may go with the Ultimate Warrior. Came at a time when physique mattered more than wrestling talent and work ethic. Did the ultimate no-nos of holding up a promoter and no-showing advertised events and still kept getting Vince's forgiveness. Also got paid a buttload by WCW to come in and suck. And Joe Thornton from Wrestling Forum says, guys like Goldberg and the Ultimate Warrior were lucky to be big, physical, roided specimens. Both Blair on the mic and lacking in-ring skills, forcing the bosses to keep their matches short and let them appear invincible by squashing guys. Warrior in particular was a horrid wrestler and not entertaining to most over the age of 10.
I think that's a bit harsh. There's a lot of roided up guys in the 80s who didn't get over, and loving my hating, Warrior did get over to some people. And
More so than Dino Bravo.
Exactly, don't begrudge that. And I like Goldberg, so
yeah,
I'm not backing
great.
That one up. Yeah. Goldberg's a man.
Maelstrom21 from Wrestling Forum says, in terms of luckiest that I haven't seen mentioned, I would say JBL has to be in the conversation. He was an afterthought, aging tag team wrestler when WWE lost so many stars to injury, retirement, and simply doing other stuff. He did some great character work, but he was never great in the ring. Not long after becoming JBL, he was world champion, getting to face guys like Eddie Guerrero and The Undertaker. Most guys at that age and with that history do not get a push of that magnitude. Hey, in terms of luck, again, luck to get the push in the first place, even luckier to get the belt when he did, because that happened to be when Eddie Guerrero started having his issues.
Even luckier to hold on to it for as long as he did, considering the lack of drawing power he had.
I know, it's stunning to me. I mean, that's fucking lucky, because out of nowhere, and again, in that period of time too, 2004, when they were getting all fucking particular about the way guys have to work, and he got JBL fucking sucking it up a storm over on SmackDown. So Suplex Sinner from the UK fan forum says, and his name had to come up, unluckiest must be Ken Anderson. Potato Batista and The Undertaker inadvertently constantly getting injured, and all the while on the brink of something everyone accepted as huge. Big disappointment as he talked a good game and the WWE did a good job of hyping him. Siva PC from F4W says, Mr. Kennedy had rotten luck when he was rising, when the doctors misdiagnosed his injury a few days before he was supposed to be the world champion, and was about to be revealed as McMahon's son in a major angle until Kennedy got himself busted in a pharmacy scandal. Of course, he makes his big return, Orton throws a hissy fit, and then he's gone. And number one WWF fan from the TPWW forums also agrees and says, Kennedy is always the one that comes to mind. There was the issue of them rushing Money in the Bank off of him, and then finding out his injury wasn't as serious as they thought. He comes back for a while and seems in line for another major push before getting injured again. He comes back from that injury looking like he's going to be a major face, and it lasts one match before that weird Orton debacle leads to his firing. Never seen a guy have so many chances to become a major star get thwarted just at the worst moment.
Yeah, it's a kind of, so he was unlucky in some respects, and then others was just his plain stupidity. I mean, the bit where he got caught with the drugs, what was it, the call,
so
the prescription.
Yeah, after he had after the Benoit thing, he decides to take the company, you know, I'm gonna fucking get points with Vince here and go public and talk about how I used to be on steroids and the wellness policy got me clean. And then he gets fucking busted for online pharmacy steroid prescription. So
so that wasn't unlucky, that was just retarded. Okay. that's him being an idiot. Then you could state, in terms of he pissed off the wrong person with Orton.
Wasn't just Orton though, that's the problem. He'd pissed off Michaels, he'd pissed off Cena, he'd pissed off Taker.
But it was the fact that it was on the Orton moment where it damaged his collarbone, was it?
Well, yeah.
Did he break his collarbone?
He didn't break it. Orton always had the trick collarbone. He always had the weird shoulder deal that would always separate. So Kennedy in his first match back does the back suplex and drops him right on his shoulder. So Orton gets up in the middle of the ring and just throws one of his classic hissy fits where he just punches the air and just starts banging them out on his way to a tag out, and it's just...
But I definitely think the unlucky part was with the misdiagnose by the doctor, where he's just won Money in the Bank at WrestleMania. He looks like he's on the cusp of being like the next star, like I thought at the time, and then like just a complete botch up by everyone involved there, where, you know, they think like he's going to be out for so long, so he loses the belt at the briefcase to Edge, and then it turns like, oh no, actually he'll be fine in like a couple of weeks. Edge, as soon as he won it the next night, cashed it in and won the belt off Undertaker. So it's just like a massive fuck up, and it wasn't Kennedy's fault. You know, all he did was turn up for the appointment, and so that part, because everything else was just like, again, it's that domino effect. But yeah, and so a lot further down the line, it's a lot of stuff that's Kennedy's own fault. Whereas I think he was desperately trying to climb back up to that first position he was at, and he just made some stupid mistakes because it was that first one that was the unlucky one for him.
Were there a couple of muscle tears? Well, what does that come from?
Yeah, exactly. And that whole thing with Taker was a mix of good luck and bad luck balancing each other out, because he wouldn't have even been considered to get the belt from Undertaker at that particular time had Taker not been injured anyway. They needed to write Taker off. So they had to get the belt off Taker, and that's why Kennedy would have got the chance had he not been misdiagnosed, and then Edge got it, and there you go.
I can't have too much sympathy for him, really, just because personally, I always thought he was incredibly overrated. So in many respects, I think he was lucky to even be considered for the potential pushes he was going to get.
Yashimaga from Wrestling Forum. There's a couple left that we got to get to here because they just have to be mentioned. Yashimaga from Wrestling Forum says, luckiest has to be Triple H. Ever since the Click saw Terror Rising jerking the curtain on Saturday night and decided that he'd be the perfect guy to carry their bags around, he's had a string of lucky breaks. The fact that he was friends with HBK, Diesel and Razor led to him being able to sit in on some creative meetings and let his voice be heard. Once he had Vince's ear, it was all uphill from there. This led to him meeting and marrying the boss's daughter, and fast forward to 2015, and you have a guy who can write and rewrite his own future and history within the company. His favourite hobby seems to be making himself out to be a much bigger deal than he ever actually was. He's relentless with spreading the fairy tale that he was on the same level as Austin, Rock and Hogan. He's able to spread this message and stay in a prominent on-screen role simply due to the fact that he was lucky enough to marry McMahon. And RZombie88 from F4W says, luckiest Triple H, mid-carder, became the boss of the company, your winner.
That is completely harsh, I think, because you just simply can't choose who your friends are. And you can't choose who you fall in love with. Simple as that.
I've heard him say that before.
You just can't choose who you fall in love with. It was lucky that she just turned out to be the daughter of the boss. That's all. That's where the luck was. That's where it was, because you just can't help it.
It's a fairy tale.
I know. He was lucky that she was willing to forget about China, quite frankly. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think he's just the smartest man in the business.
Well, he clearly is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he hasn't got the charm of Big Kev, but he's...
You know what, though? When you say he hasn't got the charm of Big Kev, maybe not to some, but when I think about the fact that he was able to have his voice heard within the first 2 years of the company... Yeah. I mean, look at how many guys now on the roster. They have to go along with whatever they do. It's like Triple H, within the first fucking 6 months, is making suggestions and sitting on these meetings, and it's ridiculous. But he earned the trust. Yeah, I don't want to hear any unlucky shit about curtain call either. I'm not in the mood for any of that tonight.
Also, you have to remember that he wasn't completely lucky with Steph, because Vince was against the relationship from the start. And quite frankly, so they did start dating for a while, but Vince didn't like it, so he stopped him and said they couldn't see each other anymore. So there was a lot of resistance.
Did you see that on Total Divas?
There's a lot of resistance. This is on the DVD. Triple H said this himself, but believe him.
Must be right. True.
And just so many restrictions by the company. I mean, but Linda was like all in fighting going on here for Vince. Triple H had to fight for the love. That's what it was. And quite frankly, he must be lucky to have such strength to fight for love.
All you can say about it, G, is that love lifts us up where we belong.
Well, you just giving me the outro for this show. Champagne from Pro Wrestling Only with our final suggestion here. Lex Luger. 1988, Luger feuds with Ric Flair throughout the second half of the year. His coming out on the losing end is the result of Flair's backstage power struggle with Dusty, as the Nature Boy refuses to put over Lex. In 89, Lex turns on Ricky Steamboat, but the feud is almost immediately aborted when WCW doesn't re-sign the Dragon. In 90, Luger is a late replacement for the injured Sting as Flair's opponent at WrestleWar. Luger fails to win the belt here, and in a series of rematches, after Flair again declines to drop the belt to Lex, saying he had promised the belt to Sting instead. In the end, Luger again looks like a failure due to backstage politics. 91, Flair is scheduled to finally put over Luger for the title of the Great American Bash, but behind the scenes, Flair squabbles with Jim Herd, and their animosity escalates until he is fired without dropping the title. Luger ends up pinning Barry Windham to win the championship, but his first world title reign is permanently tarnished. He also mentions 93, but Damien Ray from TPW adds and says, gets a mega push as Hogan's would-be replacement, but gets a count-out win at SummerSlam, dual win at the Rumble, and a screwjob DQ at Mania, then off to WWF Oblivion until finally leaving later that year. However, on the flip side, quote the Raven from the UK Fan Forum, says Lex Luger, the guy looked great, but how he got to the spots he did is beyond me. So I guess a combination of good look and bad there. So balances itself out for Lex, do you think, in the end?
Yeah, because it never would have worked anyway, so who cares? Fucking, he's the one who celebrated the count-out win, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he wasn't the one who signaled for the balloons to be dropped.
So on that note, that pretty much wraps us up for this week. We've had a hell of a time talking about lucky and unluckiest wrestlers in the business. Let's do this around the table very quickly, fellas. I'm going to put you on the spot. Your personal picks for luckiest and unluckiest before we take it home.
The luckiest will be Sasha Banks in November when I meet her at the Raw in Manchester tapings.
Uh-huh.
Get ready, darling. Your life's going to change.
That's your answer. That's his real answer.
Hang on, I'll think
even taking away the untimely end, I think I'm going to go with Brian Pillman for most unlucky, just because there's just a barrage of bad things happening over the course of his career.
Yeah, I'd say we were all unlucky, because that could have been something really special in the Attitude Era of that gimmick. And,
yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of just so disappointing for everyone on multiple levels.
I've personally got to keep the hatred going, haven't I, and say luckiest is Kane.
Oh yeah, I agree with that one too.
I'm in agreement with you in terms of luckiest. It's going to be either Kane or, you know, Brutus the shit cake himself. It's going to be one of those. In terms of unluckiest, my first thought went to Kennedy, but I also think just one that hasn't been mentioned, I'll just briefly talk about now, is Perfect as well, being quite unlucky with the back injury when he did, because I thought, like, obviously he did come back in the end, but like at the back injury at the time in which, you know he was top of his game, he was really at his best. So I just thought, like, it's maybe not as conclusive as a lot of others, but I just thought it was a bit unlucky for him to get a back injury at that time in his career, and though he continued for many years later, he was never quite the same afterwards. So I felt that was a bit unlucky.
He was unlucky, but there was a touch of the Shawns about it when it comes to the old Lloyds of London insurance policy.
Mentioned Shawn, I'll absolutely say Shawn was the unluckiest, because
all those things that got in the way from losing all those belts.
Yeah, I mean, look at all those horrible injuries, the beatings by the whole US Marines. He's come through so much. JC's on his side, and I'm not talking about John Cena.
Or Jim Cornette, for that
matter. Yeah.
We didn't get to your feedback this time. We apologise. We had so much to get to. Again, to guarantee that yours is read next week, send it along early to scgradio@hotmail.com. Again, next week we're returning for the trial of Hulk Hogan on the charge that he's committed irreparable damage to the wrestling business over the course of his career. It's going to be a very fun show next week. Hogan's going down. So, for G. John Chase,
Hunter Hart Steph,
for Carl Jones,
where the eagles fly on a mountain high,
and for Kieran O'Rourke,
I don't know the words, dude, sorry. I was gonna go, but no, so bye.
And on that note, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here. Thank you for listening.